Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Today in the studio, we have Scott Welly. All the crowds behind me. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thanks.
Yeah. I started this podcast because I believe in the need for innovative leaders and business owners to get well-written content, enriching audio, connections, and inspiration from their peers through weekly mentoring conversations. So the purpose of my podcast show is to showcase what entrepreneurial leadership and business ownership is really like by having guests and myself share the good, the bad, and the opportunities in life as entrepreneurial leaders. I've always been passionate about helping entrepreneurs navigate their lives as innovators. This podcast is working. We experienced 1,000% growth between this year and last year, and we're not even done with this year. With this kind of growth, I have to really bump up our security, our storage. There's like 10,000 robots and spiders hacking at my site every day. I mean, it's really incredible, like 17 different types. And it just all of a sudden, because our numbers just have been skyrocketing. So anyways, I'm asking our audience, if they haven't already contributed, that if they can please help me out. So $5 will help us boost up our security. $25 will help us build out our storage so that anyone can have access to the episodes. We've got about 2,000 people listening in every week. And we've got over 36,000 visitors every month.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really great.
Good for you. Kudos to you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I'm going to keep building it.
good.
And if people really want to make a big contribution, $250 or more will help us really build out the infrastructure so that we can continue to bring you the best programming that's possible. So, Scott, welcome to the program. Scott is the number one international best-selling author, speaker, peak performance strategist, and founder of Outperform the Norm, which trains high achievers and athletes to remove their self-imposed limitations, increase confidence, and accomplish more than they ever thought possible. Scott has worked with professional athletes in the NFL, MLB, PGA Tour, elite-level triathletes, CEOs, stay-at-home moms, and everyday heroes who all had one common goal: to improve and to be better today than they were yesterday. Scott's 8 best-selling books, articles, videos, and online programs inspire hundreds of thousands of people worldwide. He has a master's degree in sports psychology, serves on the executive certification board for NESTA, which is what? What does NESTA stand
for? National Exercise and Sports Trainers Association.
Okay. The advisory board of Minnesota School of Business, Globe University, and the board of directors for the Minnesota Distance Runners Association. He's a contributor to Personal Trainer magazine and was a featured author in Pure Genius. Welcome to our first on-air mentoring conversation. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, how are you feeling right now?
I'm good. I'm actually really good.
Yeah. Give me some more of your feelings that you wrote down in your self-awareness mentoring journal. I want to hear like the details.
The details? Well, I spoke to a group of executives in transition downtown this morning.
And in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis. And every time that I do that, I'm always just a little bit charged up for the whole day. It's really where I find a lot of passion. It's really the area of my life that fills me up, is going and speaking in front of groups and just interacting with people.
Oh, that's
so excellent. That was about an hour and a half workshop this morning. And then that always just carries over. And I'm sure we'll probably talk about it at some point in this conversation, but I'm a big believer in exercise and in physical activity. So I ran a little bit this morning because I always run and I do some form of activity before I go and I speak. And then I also got in a little run before I came here to do this podcast. So I'm very filled up. I'm very energetic and I'm feeling really good right now.
Oh, that's terrific. I'm recovering from a loss. We had to take our guinea pig to the veterinary's emergency services last night at 10 o'clock, and we had to put her down, and it was a very sad moment. So Matthew and I are, and Olivia are just kind of recovering a little bit today.
Yeah.
But I also have this joyful feeling because I'm glad that you're here. Mike's here. The pictures turned out great that we took. I can't wait for the audience to see them.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss. I've actually had a lot of loss in my life this year as well. And if I wrote down any negative emotions right now, it was kind of related to that. So,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, my mother passed away in March from throat cancer.
Then
I lost my dog, passed away 3.5 weeks after that, right at the end of March.
Oh my God.
Then on Mother's Day, actually, my father, they found a cancerous mass on his colon, and he had to go in for major surgery to have part of that removed. And thankfully, he's fine now, and he's recovered, but he had kind of a bad aftermath after the surgery where he ended up getting pneumonia and had to go back into the hospital and then was discharged after that, but then had to go back in with an infection. So he's had, you know, his own struggles there, but he's doing well now. And there's just been a lot to juggle personally in my life this year, at least. But it's getting better now. I'm feeling a little bit more like I'm back in the swing of things.
And like it isn't quite so heavy of a feeling, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. It was a huge weight on my shoulders because I was the primary caregiver for, you know, my parents obviously weren't in very good health, and my dad isn't in very good health right now. So I was primarily the one. They live in Albany, Minnesota, which is a small town off Interstate 94.
Parents live in Sauk Center.
Oh,
so
not too far up the highway. Stearns County.
Yeah. Right.
So it's about an hour and a half away, and it was just a lot of trips back and forth, you know, really in the first couple months of the year, just helping my mom out with her treatment options and being there to support her and deal with kind of some of the ins and outs. And then I've obviously been doing that with my dad as well. So it's something that a lot of us go through, and it's nothing that any of us, I think, plan for, but you just manage it as best you can.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of go one day at a time.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you make the best decisions you can at the time.
Yeah.
You know, none of them are easy.
No, it's never easy. And it's easy to kind of sit there and to say, why me? Like, why am I going through this right now? You know, why are all these things happening to me? But that's not a very empowering attitude either. And I talk so often about, obviously, a lot of different mental training and kind of sports psychology things. And one of the most powerful things that we can all do is just have an attitude of gratitude.
Right.
You know, is to look at it instead of saying, you know, what's wrong in my life right now? Well, what do I genuinely have that fills me up? Like I talk about speaking, you know, what am I doing now that like really makes me feel good that I have, that I look forward to? And I think especially when you're going through tough times in your life, whatever they might be personally and professionally, if you can start each day with that attitude of gratitude, it just sets the tone for an outperforming day after that, as I look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matthew and I went to yoga together, and so it was kind of like a really nice time. I mean, he took a different – actually, we normally on Sundays take a yoga class together, and then we have a church group that we go to kind of make it a fun day. But this morning, so I went, and he had another class that he took at the same time. But it was really nice to be able to work out together.
Yeah.
Even if it's separate workouts in the same place and then come together and say, you know, we did this for ourselves and now we can go out and conquer the rest of the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this Monday has been quite an eventful day for you and me.
Yeah, that's right. Never a dull moment, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, thank you for being so open about what you've been experiencing this year.
Sure.
Yeah, that's not easy to go through. But we do dig deep to find what we're made of in these kind of circumstances.
And it's not something that I was ever that comfortable sharing before. I mean, I always thought that was kind of one of the barriers that held me back for a long time as a speaker, is that you give me a strengths finder or something like that. Yeah. I always test very high in command and confidence and belief and things like that. And I can stand up in front of a crowd and an audience and kind of command the troops, so to speak. But sure. To share vulnerability and transparency as far as what you're going through and really the struggles that you're going through each day, I've connected with more people in audiences and, you know, things that I've done just so far this year by sharing some of the struggles that I've had than I think I ever did before. And it's never that easy to do, but it is something that I feel like can help some people with whatever they're going through.
Yeah, and it probably lightens your load so that you're not feeling like you have to take that on and carry it by yourself.
Right, yeah.
Like you can share it with other people and then they can decide how they want to respond.
Exactly. And inevitably, you have people come up to you and they say, yeah, you know, I'm going through this myself right now, or I've gone through that. And I think especially when we talk about entrepreneurs and things like that, like I was talking to your husband about this. There can always be a feeling that like no one understands what I'm going through. Like I'm out here on this island and like no one gets how hard it is for me right now, like the day-to-day struggles and the responsibilities and the obligations and what I'm trying to make happen.
Yeah.
And I think that ability to relate and that ability to connect to people is just a really powerful thing.
Absolutely. Great. All right. Well, you and I met at the Optimist Club earlier this year, and I'm finding that is like a really cool organization. And I'll put a link in the podcast notes so that people can check it out too, because they've got nice, well-organized things. And I noticed that you're on the docket to speak to the group in Roseville in February.
I am. I'm looking forward to it. I absolutely love that group. I love the creed, the Optimist creed.
Yeah.
I mean, that is something that I read that and it just strikes a chord in me. Like everything about it, it's so powerful.
So everybody stands up and says the creed.
Yeah.
And so it's like you're making a commitment to be a positive influence in people's lives.
Yep.
And what are some of the other details I was trying to remember about the creed? About being supportive of each other, about speaking the truth, about helping younger people.
Helping youth.
Yes. Yeah.
And civic responsibility, community responsibility, and just how you, I think there's some line in it, and I would compel everybody to click on the link and to go and look into the Optimist Club, and if there's one that you can join or get to, absolutely go ahead and do that. But just look at the creed, because it has something to the effect of, I will be so consumed or so dedicated to positivity that there's no room for negativity and putting people down. I can't remember exactly how the line goes, but it's so powerful.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Great. Well, and it just pays to get out and check out these different organizations, because there seems to be quite a few of them around.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of meetup.com?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, you have?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, have you been to any of those meetings?
Have I been to a meetup?
Like, there's a huge variety of different types of meetings. Like I was really shocked. And like, you can go to one pretty much any day of the week. There's a group that I was going to go to, a writer's group, where they do like free flow writing on Saturday mornings. And but they've got the person who's organizing it. And then you can see also who else is attending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have not been to a meetup in at least a reasonably long time. You know, in my estimation, when I used to get emails for these meetups all the time, and I think it can become a little bit diluted, where maybe you've got you've got five different people that are having meetups for entrepreneurs, you know, whereas I think it would probably be better served and everybody would benefit more if there was just one larger group of people probably getting together than a bunch of smaller clusters of, of people making
it
happen.
I think so, too, because it seems like they're struggling to kind of grow their groups, too.
Yeah, and I have enough different groups that I'm involved in, from Optimist Club to sales associations and just different things that I do, that there's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah,
so
right.
I would be very strategic about the meetups that I would look at. Like something as far as writing, I think that that's enough of kind of a niche that you could look at it and attend something like that. But otherwise, I think you can be spread a little bit thin.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that you mentioned in your book to really kind of watch out for. And I think it was around conserving your energy. And one of the downfalls is that people end up spreading themselves too thin. And so you lose a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Dispersing out in on all different directions.
Well, I sometimes liken it to a cell phone.
Yes.
Like you look at it and it's basically like the same way that you have to recharge a cell phone battery.
Yeah.
You have to recharge your physical and mental and emotional batteries as well.
Right.
So a cell phone battery will get drained if you don't plug it in regularly, while our batteries get drained if we're constantly doing things, spreading ourselves thin and not plugging that back in. So I think to be able to take time for yourself, like you brought up doing yoga before and something like that, like those things, whatever it might be, whether it's yoga or whether it's me going for a run or whether you go to a sporting event or watch your favorite reality TV show or you go to a concert, like something that you find intrinsically enjoyable that, you know, will allow you to kind of detach from some of those responsibilities, I think is helpful as far as recharging your batteries.
I read what you had mentioned. It's called Wellingness, and it's a super achiever's guide to peak productivity, vibrant health, and living an extraordinary life. And you had mentioned that that's your first book that you wrote?
I believe that was
one of the first. Okay, yeah. Well, in there, like you were talking about conserving your energy and referring it to the cell phone. You also mentioned in your book that when you like when you're driving and you get really like upset with the driver, in, you know, and you use up so much energy trying to control the other driver or yelling at the other person. And, you know, person doesn't always look at it exactly as, you know, expending so much energy. I mean, you notice, oh, yeah, that's angry. And, oh, yeah, that person is angry and out of control. But I thought when I was reading this, I thought that, yeah, looking at it from the perspective of your, you know, excelling energy, that's really negative. And that depletes your ability to be at your maximum performance.
Well, it does. And one of the concepts that I always bring up, almost regardless of what type of group I'm speaking to, whether we're talking about entrepreneurs or sales leaders or even athletes, it's if you are going through any amount of stress or worry or something where you're feeling really drained in your life, it's probably because you're trying to control outcomes and trying to control results and things over which you only have indirect control. And when we bring up the example of like road rage or like, you know what, you're getting really mad about somebody cutting you off in traffic, you're getting really mad. I mean, I used to have, I think of a couple of roommates that I had after college that were notorious for this. I mean, they would get so mad about every single person that was driving too slowly or would cut them off or would be doing something wrong on the road. And I would just look right at them and I would say, what can you do to control what the other person is doing? Okay, oh, well, I can't do anything. And I would say, okay, well, then why are you expending energy doing that? And I think we all do it where we try and control these different outcomes when we actually can't do that. So to be able to pull it back and to be able to focus on what I sometimes call the process, or just kind of, you know, your daily actions, I guess, on a day-to-day basis, or just managing, that's a case of managing your mindset, where you just say, you know what, I can't control what this person or what that person is doing. All I can control is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And just let the rest take care of itself.
And the other, like sometimes I notice when I get controlling, that I feel that I'm feeling internally out of control. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to control external things because I'm not, you know, able to like ground myself. Mm-hmm. And so then I'm like, okay, let's flip the switch and go inward, because I'm getting the feedback that, you know, I'm trying to control some stuff that I have no control over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's more about me.
Yeah.
I hate that.
It's always about us.
Hey, I know, right?
Hey, I do it too.
One of these times I want to just point the finger and really have it be them.
No, it's always about us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Scott, can you tell us a little bit about like how you grew up and how you got into the field of sports psychology and coaching, and what were the things that happened in your youth that kind of pointed you in that direction?
Yeah, well, I'll try and give you the short version of it, but
you don't have to.
Well, we might be here all day.
Well, okay.
but I always loved sports growing up.
Yeah.
I was a football player, a basketball player, and a golfer. I mean, those are my big sports. But
are they still?
Well, there are only so many hours in a day again, and I've kind of drifted into running marathons, Ironman triathlons, different things like that. So
okay.
I still play. I don't play any football, and I only play a very little bit of basketball and some golf.
Okay.
But I do primarily, you know, things that are going to kind of where I still get my competitive outlet, but they allow me to stay physically in shape as well. And
sure.
That's the running, biking, swimming, things like that. But I've just always been very, very interested in sports early on, playing in high school. And then I went off to college, and I mean, to call it what it is, you kind of get to that sophomore time and you've got to declare a major, and I didn't really know where I wanted to go or what I wanted to do with my life. So
yeah.
It's like, okay, well, what can I major in? It's like, well, I'll major in psychology. So I majored in psychology and found that there were some of the classes that were very interesting, from just understanding the mind. I think of like social psychology, I think of abnormal psychology.
Yeah.
Some of the classes I took at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I was like, wow, okay, so that's kind of interesting. But still, I got to getting towards the end of my senior year at Wisconsin, and I was saying, okay, so I'm going to be graduating with this major in psychology. It's sort of like, all right, well, what do you do with that? And I was thinking about, okay, well, what are your options? Well, what are the things that you're interested in? You're really interested in sports, and you're really interested in psychology. And it was just at a time where I feel like some of the stigma was being lifted around sports psychology, because it used to be thought that sports psychology was like clinical psychology. Like,
oh,
there had
I
to
see.
Be something wrong with you as an athlete if you were going to be working with a sports psychologist. And it was just coming to the forefront that it's like, you know what? The highest performing athletes on the planet all work with a sports psychologist because they want performance enhancement, not because they have any underlying deficiency. So I looked at it and I said, you know what? I'm going to go off and I'm going to get a master's degree in sports psychology. And I did that and started working with athletes on the applied side of mental training and of peak performance. And that really kind of led into me working with athletes. And then it was just somewhere in kind of the years after that I started looking at what some other people were doing with sports psychology majors. And I really realized from the people that I dealt with in the professional realm how much of a hand and glove fit it was between the same principles that elite and professional level athletes go through as far as motivating themselves, developing discipline, having goals, focusing, avoiding overtraining and burnout, and just different things like that, and how those same skills really apply to professionals getting better results in their life. So I just started making kind of some of those parallels.
Cool. Well, and that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So
it does to me, at least.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And like you said, psychology has really changed a lot. It's the stigma is gone, and so really a sign of mental health mm-hmm. is to get help when you feel you need help. Mm-hmm. It's not a weakness. Mm-hmm. And that's how you actually continue to take risks and be vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
yeah. putting yourself out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is through learning some tools and skills and ways to think
mm-hmm.
To help position yourself so that you have the tools to work through pain.
Yeah.
And not cover it up or...
Yeah, I oftentimes say that our mind can be our greatest asset or our largest liability. It yeah. just really depends how we use it. And one of the questions that if I'm speaking to a group of, let's say, youth athletes on mental training, I think of the last group that I spoke to was a lacrosse team that was back this last spring, and they were the number one team in state. And I walked in, the first thing that I said is, what percentage, because they were the number one ranked team, I said, what percentage of your success in lacrosse is mental? And I asked a few different people, and some of them said 60, some said 70, 80, 50, but it's always more than 50%, regardless of what population of athletes have asked. The answer is never less than 50. And then I say, okay, well then how much time are you spending looking at how you can train your mind for peak performance? And the reason that I bring this up is just if you look at like entrepreneurs and things like that, okay, well, what percentage of your success as an entrepreneur is going to be based on your ability to manage your mind and your ability to stay resilient and your ability to deal with the humps and bumps and stay focused on the process and the things that you need to do to lead to these outcomes and everything else? And the fact of the matter is it's just a huge percent, and those thoughts end up leading to feelings and physiological emotions and things going on throughout our body, and then those emotions end up leading to behaviors and the actions that determine our results and determine our lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. How big of a family did you grow up in?
I have one older brother. He's a year and a half older, and he's a Catholic priest.
Wow. Okay. Where at?
Small family. He lives in Italy.
Okay.
Lives in Rome, Italy. We just got done running the Rome Marathon in April.
Oh.
It's kind of a brotherly bonding thing that we started a few years ago. I think this is our 12th marathon that we've run together. And it's just every year we run one marathon somewhere. That's our first international marathon. But we run some marathon together at some part of the U.S. or I guess now internationally together. And it's a cool bonding experience between us.
Yeah, very. That's great. Is he older or younger?
A year and a half older.
Year and a half older.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like when you mentioned overtraining, I always mm-hmm. think of anyone doing triathlons, Ironman, marathons.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't overtraining part of the process?
Is that
a different way to think about it?
We can kind of get into semantics on that one. Some people will call it overreaching versus overtraining. Overtraining is usually where you're going, I think based on most of the definitions you would see, you're going just a little bit above and beyond or taxing your body just a little bit more than you should. Overreaching or, constantly kind of stressing yourself is a necessary tactic, I guess, to improve as an athlete. You think about it. Okay, so if we're going to go out and if we're going to lift weights, all right, a lot of people think, okay, well, you get stronger when you lift weights. No, you don't. What you're doing is you actually break your body down when you're doing any form of exercise or athletic activity, whatever it is. You break it down, and then assuming that you have the proper recovery strategies and whatnot, then it builds up stronger than it was before. And then you get to the next training session where you go and you lift weights again, you break it down again, and then it builds up stronger. So what overtraining is basically like you're either working out too hard or you're not recovering enough, but the overreaching part of it would be you're just continually giving your body a greater stimulus, I guess I would say, in some way, shape, or form, whether we're talking about weights or running or yoga or biking or anything else.
Okay.
And that's how you increase your fitness and that's how you get better. But
through overreaching.
Through overreaching. And it's,
yeah.
we don't need to get into the, you know, depths of it, but it's very, I always say there's art and science to training, and no two athletes are exactly the same. What might be overtraining for one athlete might only be overreaching for another athlete, just because based on a complex set of physiological factors, who your parents were, you know, how quickly you recover. I mean, some people, especially when you look at the top performing athletes on the planet, like they just have stronger connective tissue and they just bounce back better and faster than a lot of other people. And that's part of the reason they're able to do what they do.
Oh, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And what about like all this conversation about like different joints when you're doing repetitive activities?
Mm-hmm.
How does, tell us more about it.
I always say variety is the spice of life. So I think anything in excess is probably not good, whether we're talking about yoga or whether we're talking about CrossFit or whether we're talking about running or whether we're talking about anything else. I think exposing the body to different things is a good thing because you just get different muscles involved. And instead of having the repetitive stress, whatever it is, it just allows your body to recover a little bit better and allows it to be more balanced, which I think is a good thing physically and mentally as well, because you're not doing the same thing all the time, especially with youth athletes. Right. I see too many of them that are becoming, it seems like when I was growing up, every athlete was a three-sport athlete like me. Like they played football, basketball, and golf. And I see too many athletes now that, especially youth athletes, are becoming single-sport athletes too early, where they just decide, you know what, I want to be really good at basketball. I want to be really good at golf. And that's all they do year round. And hockey, especially here in Minnesota, like it's just, they're overtrained because they're doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Body wasn't necessarily meant for that.
Yeah. Well, what do you do? I mean, this is kind of the dilemma a lot of parents have where, you can't control some of it. I mean, you can, because if you really want a good hockey player, I mean, you have to have
play
them.
Hockey.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like the kids are playing a lot of soccer. Mm-hmm. I know our daughter played a lot of soccer. Mm-hmm. And then it reached a point where the traveling teams started. And so you were spending a lot more time in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, all these things, some of it's really great. Like I grew up where women's sports were just becoming popular.
Sure. Yeah.
And so like I, my tennis teacher had never played tennis before.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the type of, and that was in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in college it was a little bit different, game, but I'm personally excited that girls have the chance to be in sports.
Yeah, sure.
I just think the way we're going about doing it needs to really shift so that, like you're saying, you know, a wide variety of sports.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're having kids exercise more, which is needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And I guess well, you can look at it from an exercise perspective, but I'll bring up just a couple of books that listeners are probably familiar with. Like a lot of people are familiar with Gladwell's Outliers and are familiar with kind of the rule of 10,000 hours, right? Like, you know what? You need to go and you need to put 10,000 hours into something. If you put 10,000 hours in, you're going to be world class. You know, it was kind of, I mean, it became this whole big thing where everyone was talking about it. And there's a lot of truth to what he's saying. If you want to be good at hockey or if you want to be good at soccer, you have to play hockey or
you have to
play
soccer. You have to put the time in. And,
but then another book for people that are interested in really learning anything better, but specifically athletics, is Daniel Coyle's book, The Talent Code. And what he really talks about is he kind of studied the different pockets and the different cultures of where there are these little clusters of really exceptional athletes at given sports, whether we're talking about tennis or hockey or anything else, like what do they do differently?
Yeah.
And when we look at entrepreneurs, what we're always trying to do is we're trying to be maximally productive. The definition of productivity is rate of output per unit of input. Output is the results we get. Input is our time and our energy. And we need to be as efficient and as effective as we possibly can. So to me, instead of just saying, you know what, I need to play hockey year round, or I need to play soccer soccer year round. It's like, well, no, you would actually be better off maybe scaling some of that back and doing some other things. But the time that you are spending playing hockey or playing soccer, you are really invested in it and you are really like 100% mind and body there, focused on what you're doing, instead of just thinking, well, I need to get my 10,000 hours in and then I'm going to be world class. And now you're going through the motions instead of really being invested in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's that quality and quantity.
It is exactly quality and quantity.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
The truth.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. All right, well, we've got a lot more to talk about, but I think we're running out of time for this episode already.
Okay.
I usually have a timer. I'm like, where's my timer?
Told you we could talk all day here.
Exactly. All right. Well, everybody, keep listening. Would you like to come back for a second episode?
I would absolutely love to.
Great. Yeah. All right. So Scott will be back here, and we've got a lot more tips and insights. And thanks for tuning in, and thanks, Scott, for being so open and transparent and vulnerable with us today.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's my pleasure.
Great. And Mike Cabea, sound engineer, photographer, brother from another mother. Thanks for being here. See you next week. Thanks, everybody.
Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process. Along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning, we do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.